Hey friend, really proud of this Portfolio Career podcast episode with Chris Shembra. Chris is a keynote speaker, Broadway producer, entrepreneur advisor, podcast host, and the founder and chief question asker of 747, a dinner series that has sparked more than 300,000 relationships. Yeah. In this episode, you'll learn about the power of asking good questions, his research project, empathy exercises, and how to be specific about your interests and ambitions. Oh, and Chris also details some incredible stories here. So tune in to build and grow your portfolio career. And as always, let me know what you think. Cool. Welcome to Portfolio Career Podcast. Your host, David Nabinski, is here with Chris Shembra. How's it going, Chris?
So good. Yeah. So excited to be here with you.
Likewise. Thanks for being on the show. So, Chris, if we were to go to an event tonight, how do you typically introduce yourself?
That's a great question. I am kind of an elusive character. When I'm at an event and I go up and say hi to someone, I'll ask them all about themselves. And if they try to ask me what I do, I usually say I'm a plumber, or just deflect it back to them. The more I can ask them instead of having to answer me, the better.
Okay. And can't wait to learn more about your plumbing career and everything. But so I think, you know, let's say like your LinkedIn title says, you know, chief question asker. Yeah. Yeah, so this is an honor to ask to the question asker himself. So maybe we can start off with just, you know, 747, you know, and that your title and mm-hmm. a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of stories. And so I'm going to take us back to, it's the Upper West Side in beautiful New York City, July of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I was involved in theater, on the production side of theater in the city. And I just come back from Italy after producing a Broadway play over there. And when I got back to New York, realized theater wasn't really doing it for me. It's pretty unfulfilled. It's pretty lonely. I was really insecure. I started fiddling with food in my kitchen and accidentally created a pasta sauce recipe and figured I should probably feed it to people to see if it's even good or not. So on Wednesday, July 15th, 2015, we invited 15 of my friends over to our home and tried out the sauce. Because I was a lazy fella, I actually invited people into the kitchen and they helped out to prepare the meal and shared activities and delegated tasks, and we all sat down together and had some pasta and had some ice cream and had some communal discussion, asked them about gratitude and asked them to share some stories, and they really liked the feeling. They liked the pasta. They liked having dinner with a small group of individuals. So we decided to do the dinner the next week, and the next week, and the next week. And haven't really stopped since. So 747 morphed out of dozens of free dinners in our home just to test the model and get feedback from the community. And eventually we found that we got so good at creating the safe spaces for people to gather around our dinner table, and companies started seeing the value in what we were doing. And so they would ask us to come in and help them build better relationships with their clients and partners all around pasta sauce and delegated tasks. And so here we are 3 years later. Our organization is really focused in on helping the workplace become more human. And it all starts around the dinner table with your closest clients and partners.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had the lucky privilege of attending a dinner and having a blast, so thank you.
Yes.
And I was, so we're at WeWork here, and just walking in here, I was blown away by, I'm here to see Chris Shembra, and they're like, he asked the best questions. And I was like, it's gonna make this hard for me. But, so yeah, I think it's, you know, really, you know, fascinating to me is how you've been able to kind of design your life and build a business on being friendly, social, and bringing people together. What advice do you have for people that are trying to build a community in terms of designing a life? What kind of lessons learned from the 3 years and thousands and thousands of people that you brought together?
You know, it's a great question. Thank you for asking that. And the only advice that I could really ever give on this topic is actually the line, or a line, in the first play I ever produced in New York City. First play I ever produced in New York City was a one-man play about Fiorello LaGuardia, former mayor of New York City, LaGuardia Airport. He was a 7-term congressman, a 3-term mayor. He had many, many things happen to him in his life. And in the play, up on stage, we have Fiorello LaGuardia holding a picture of his two kids, Eric and Gene, and he looks down at the photograph and says, "Kids, don't worry about people knowing you. Make yourself worth knowing." And as you put that into the lens of community, I do believe that when you go out with the intention of doing a good job, and when you go out with the intention of serving the people, that's the attracting force that makes people want to do or be a part of what you're doing. And so when you're building the community, all you need to focus in on is doing something so good that it'll make people talk about it.
Mm.
But don't worry about people knowing you. Just be an expert at your craft. Whatever the craft is, you know, before we pressed record on this, we were talking about our friend Victoria Taylor, who's now, you know, helping people connect through technology platform over shared passions and interests. That's community. And when you get so laser focused in on what your passion is, what your unique skills are, what your interests are, people will be attracted to that because, you know, people want to believe in what you believe in. They're attracted to why you're doing something, not what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really grateful that Victoria actually introduced us. And considering how many people you brought together, I can imagine your time may be pretty limited and people are always kind of coming to you for requests and advice and stuff. Like, how do you manage your time to be productive, in service? Any examples or tips?
Of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, 2015 is when we started the dinners. And we kept on doing them every week, once a week, for free in our home. That went on for a great deal of time. In January of 2016, we left the theater industry to try to figure out what was next. We had all these different ideas. We had all these different things that we were good at. And on Sunday, January 24th, 2016, Snowstorm Jonas hit New York City. We went sledding with a family for the second year in a row. And during that snowstorm, I got to sit down with the family that we were all sledding with. And the guy said, "Hey, now that you're not in theater, what are you going to do?" I said, "Well, I could do this, I could do that, I could do this, I could do that." And he said, no, Chris. You can't chase two rabbits at the same time. They'll both get away. Focus equals growth." And what that taught us was that you need to really, really, really focus in on, you know, one or two things that you're going to be known for and try to become one of the best in the world at that. And when people want to come into your ecosystem, you have to have the laser focus to exclude purposefully and nicely, exclude that which doesn't fit into your focus. Because if you don't, you'll spread yourself way too thin. And when I talk about you have to be radical enough to exclude something, it's like the power of saying no.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like Mark Manson's book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. It's stoicism. It's not that he's advocating that you shouldn't give a fuck about things. It's just that you should only give a fuck about the things that you should give a fuck about and not worry about the things that you have no control over or outside of your wheelhouse. And so when people come in, to answer your question, sorry about that long-winded answer, when people come into our ecosystem and it doesn't fit into our focus equals growth, we have to respectfully decline. And us respectfully declining is actually helping that person more than if we accepted to give them help and just half-assed it. And so we had to understand that just through experience. We had to understand that through the advice of our mentors. And we're very, very, very steadfast with it.
And then can you give an example of like what that looks like? Is that, let's say today you got an email and someone says, "Hey, Chris, I want to pick your brain."
Perfect. So I'd say we get requests two ways. One, can we pick your brain? Two, can I introduce you to someone? And the pick your brain part, we've been able to see that our advice or our connections can create literally 9-figure deals
that have been business deals. Yep.
So there's a lot of value in that. And so when people say, "Can we pick your brain?" we say, "Yes, you can. And this is what it'll cost." Because the value that we're providing is, you know, it needs to be, you know, rewarded. And it was so tough early on because we just wanted to give value to everybody.
Right.
But then we had to look at the architecture of us connecting people around our dinner table when they were every week, once a week for free in our home was the greatest value add that we could ever give a community. If one of them came back to us and said, "You know, that was great. Can I pick your brain on this?" Well, you've just got a lot of value from us. That was our way of giving and giving fruitfully. But our time is very valuable. The second thing is we have a lot of people email in saying, "Can we connect you to such and such?" I used to say yes to every introduction. Now, it has to be so laser focused on who we want to serve. For instance, we know through 3 years of doing this who our ideal target prospect is. So if someone's saying, "Can I introduce you to such and such?"
Yeah.
I want to make sure, is it that exact target prospect? If not, it's a distraction.
Okay. And then, so that's, it's like running a business, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the sense of,
oh, yeah,
you've identified who your customers are, but yet it's people. Fascinating. What are some examples of getting really good at certain things, right? Because I think, you know, what we're seeing is like you're, for what the business and the relationships and the impact that you've had, it's not taught at school. There's not really courses on this. Like, so everything's kind of is changing. Can you, what other examples are ways to, that you see from this to kind of design your life this way, of some things that people could do to get good at certain things that are valuable to somebody like you?
So the thing that I'm most proud of is the ability to ask good questions. And I'd refer people to study the style of interviews of a dear friend and mentor of mine, Cal Fussman. He hosts a column for Esquire and a podcast called Big Questions with Cal Fussman. And he has a certain set of skills that we can all tap into. His ability to ask questions transfers into the ability to make anybody fall in love with him. And I think that's very, very key for the listeners to know, is that you can really get ahead in life by being a good question asker.
Can you provide any other example or two of call it reframing of certain types of questions that people typically ask that they could say a different way that would be more effective?
I'm gonna re-answer the first question of this podcast in order to answer this question you just asked, which was, when you go up to someone at a networking event, which I hate going to events. I'm very introverted. I'm scared of people. I'm too short. But when I do talk to people at an event, the first thing I ask them is, If you could give credit or thanks to one person in your life that you don't give enough credit or thanks to, who would that be? And for the listeners, the weight behind that question is that that's the question we've asked at all 200 dinners we've ever produced. It's the question that leads to at least 3 people at every dinner crying, usually 6 people crying. It's the question that really invokes emotion, and the act of asking someone to give gratitude to someone else creates connection. And so I would just put that up and say, when you're looking at the questions that you're about to ask someone at an event, don't ask what they do. Don't ask where they work. Don't ask where they're from. Try asking that question. The act of asking someone that question, where they have to give gratitude to someone else, the focus of that conversation is on a third party. The focus of that conversation is on who they're giving gratitude to. And that's a tool for vulnerability, because you're not asking them, what's your biggest fear? What's your biggest failure? That's something vulnerable personally that they likely aren't going to give you in the first couple minutes of conversation. And so I always advocate that people ask questions like that. And I hope that people do use that question anywhere that they can, because we've been very lucky to find it and see the results that it's given.
Yeah. Again, going back to just when I came into your office, that's what the staff downstairs had said. Mm-hmm. He asked me these questions about gratitude and empathy and giving thanks and praise to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you know Chris. I'm in the right way work. That's amazing.
I'd say that's the biggest key for getting ahead and building community, is to be the person that asks the questions and facilitates the conversations. Everybody always thinks that, and social media has taught us this, that you can build a big community by being the middle of the speaker stand. So you look at social media, you know, influencers are people that have the speaker stand the entire time and their followers just follow them. I don't think that's community. I don't think that's community at all. I think community is when the needs of the people are communicated to whoever the leader is, and then action is taken onto that. When you look at entrepreneurship and you look at your podcast, you aren't trying to build something that you want to build. You're building something based on what your listeners want you to build. And that's community.
Yeah. Thank you. I've been inspired by some people that you've interviewed, and have helped me kind of think about this portfolio career podcast and vision and stuff. So thanks for a lot of your work, Chris, and the ideas that you've shared with me and stuff. And then you've done some work, and we were talking about this, you've done some work with companies, mm-hmm. and you know, bringing them together into the dinner table and maybe speaking to them in their office as well. What is that, like, let's say improving questions around the office, how does that dynamic improve companies? And is there any other examples to how does better questions in the office improve your quality of life?
Mm-hmm. And I think asking better questions in the office leads to an increase in empathy. And why empathy is so, when you can ask the right questions, you can get accurate feedback about whether it's a product, whether it's someone's personal dreams, whether it's, you know, a workplace controversy. And the more informed you are about what's going on in people's lives, the better that you can lead them. And why I say that, so empathy is a subset of emotional intelligence. Empathy is not sympathy, it's not compassion, it doesn't come from looking within, it comes from looking around. Empathy is the art of imaginatively stepping into the shoes of another person, understanding their feelings and perspectives, and using that knowledge to guide your actions. So, and 87% of CEOs believe empathy is directly tied to financial performance.
Hmm.
And so when you as a leader can ask good questions to the people that you're leading, they feel like their voice is being heard. And the more feedback you can get in that process, the more you can craft your leadership style, the more you can craft where the company is going to go based on their initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Not you pushing a top-down initiative, but when you can get feedback from the lowest rungs of the organization and bring it from the bottom up, you've empowered them to have a voice. You've empowered them to take initiative and to have innovative ideas.
That's great. And so now, you know, you said, you know, 3 years ago started and you know, the success and the friendships and the growth, like, what do you now think is kind of the change you're really trying to make?
I think we're most excited about our research study that we're in the midst of. So I'll tell you a brief story about this, how we got to this research study. So for 3.5 years, we have been doing all these dinners. It's the core of our business. Companies have really great responses to them, having a good time. Well, the secret of every dinner is that at every dinner, we ask that same question that I talked about earlier, which is, you know, who would you give credit and thanks to that you don't normally, you know, give credit to? And we've seen our attendees, because of that question, connect, get vulnerable, transform, be inspired to go off and do so many greater things in this world. And fast forward to Saturday, October 6th of this year. We were out at a wedding in Seattle, a good buddy's wedding, and I had yet to meet any of the bride's side of the family. So during the reception, the bride's mother, and father, and godfather, and all these different people would come up to our table and thank us for making the long trip. And everyone that would come by would stand up, and I'd ask them my question. So naturally, all of them cried. And eventually the bride's mother comes up and says, "Chris, can you take a walk with me?" I said, "All right." She walks me over to the cousin's table, none of whom I had met. She looks at them and she says, "This is Chris. He's going to write a book about the findings of a question he's about to ask you." I said, "Oh, well, that's news to me, but that's pretty good. I like that." So I asked them the question. They all cried. The night went on. Eventually, I see the bride's father way across the other side of the venue, gently grabbing a gentleman by the wrist, and he starts walking him our way. Over the dance floor, through the crowd of people, right past the buffet line, excitedly up to me, and he says, "Chris, you gotta ask Bill the question. You gotta ask Bill the question." That was Bill Gates. I said, "All right, we will." So Bill and Melinda and myself sat down for a great, great deal of time talking so intimately about their answers to this question, this same damn question
Wow.
that we've been asking for 3.5 years. And Bill literally turned into almost like a 6-year-old boy. Kind of like talking about the wisdom that he had always, you know, looked up to, and like an older brother figure of his. He was talking about Warren Buffett.
Wow.
And I said, "Holy cannoli, this damn question." So we got back to New York and we said, "We got to do more of this darn thing." So over the course of the next year, we're interviewing 808 venture-backed founders and CEOs, so founders that have raised between $8 million to $700 million within the last year, to uncover who are the unsung heroes in their life and what are those wisdom and stories that help them get to where they are today. Our hypothesis is that just like around the dinner table, the act of giving gratitude to others is both good for our interviewees, it's good for their relationships, and it's ultimately good for their business. And so we're taking the next year to do that.
Yeah.
And we're 92 interviews deep since November 15th.
Amazing.
And we've talked to some of the world's most successful entrepreneurs, and it's really lit a fire under our ass. It's led to tremendous amounts of business because that population that we're interviewing happens to be our exact target prospect. And so that's part of that focus equals growth thing, is that now the only person I ask to be introduced to, if someone says, "Hey, who can I introduce you to? How can I help?" I say, late 30s to early 40s male founder who's had a successful previous exit and has just raised a Series A or Series B within the last 6 months. Give them to me. Not because I want anything from them, because I want to interview them and write an article about them.
Mm.
And then that's the start of the relationship.
Mm. Very clear and specific.
There you have to be.
What a story, man. That's crazy. That's beautiful, man. Is there anything else, you know, in terms of, as you think about the life that, the career that you've built, you know, and you think about all these different jobs that are out there, or, you know, different projects that you've worked on, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about?
I mean, I think it's very important that, and I often struggle with it, is the idea that being a, running a lifestyle business, right? We're a small shop. We're four people. We're not going to make $100 million a year. We're not building a scalable technology. It can be pretty intimidating to meet really successful people who have built scalable things and are doing billion-dollar exits, and you're sitting here with a lifestyle company. There's nothing wrong about a lifestyle company. It's fucking awesome. And so I think that's the biggest thing for people when they find a passion, when they want to have a portfolio career, that thing they build on the side doesn't have to become a monster. It could just be something on the side that generates a little bit of income or no income at all, but that's still a company. Mm-hmm. It's good. You're doing a service for some other population of people. That's a company. And that's being an entrepreneur. And I think that's something that we always struggle with, is being okay with just building a lifestyle business.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a blog or just any kind of side hobby can fuel you. You know,
if
it provides income, great, but it doesn't have to. Could you maybe, or what are some other great resources to, you know, I don't want to say like empathy exercises, but what, is there anything that, you know?
I mean, for empathy exercises, I'd refer to an article that a man named Roman Krznarek wrote called The 7 Habits of Highly Empathetic People. On it, he gives a couple different exercises about what you can do to develop empathy. The good news about empathy is that it's learnable. It's we're wired for empathy. We're homo empathicus. It's actually in our DNA. And you don't have to be born with it. You can develop it over time. So that's a really neat thing, first of all, about empathy, is that don't sit there saying, well, my husband has zero empathy for my such and such, and it's too late for him. It's not too late for him. It's not too late for anything. But an empathy exercise, for instance, can be sit in your assistant's armchair for the day. So, you know, you're the big bad boss. You got a big corner office. Your assistant sits out of it or sits outside of it and feeds you phone calls. Go sit in, you know, his desk for the day or her desk for the day. Go take a deep dive into some form of art that you're not familiar with. and take a tour of the art with the artist, because then you'll learn more stories, deep dive into literature and film and music, and listen to words and listen to other people's stories and feel how they feel about different things they're talking about. You know, our dinner model, as an example of an empathy exercise I do, our dinner model is predicated on doing the same model for every client, same model for every dinner. It's the delegated tasks, it's the shared activities, it's the pasta sauce, the ice cream, the amaretto, the peanut butter, that's it. Keep doing that and do it better each time. So what I do in order to develop greater empathy for others that we may serve and develop a greater understanding of our model is I actually will do dinners blindfolded, myself blindfolded, just to feel, A, even just at a small level, what it's like to feel something different. But B, just to understand my model that much better from a different perspective. What does cooking pasta sauce feel like when you can't see? How does that change the relationship and the understanding you have with the people you're serving?
Wow. Well, I've got some homework. Empathy exercises at home.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. All right, Chris. Well, you know, I know that we mentioned the specific people to follow up with you, the founders. Is there any other, as listeners are thinking about pasta sauce recipes or, you know, wanting to, you know, follow, you know, what ways can people, you know, stay in touch and kind of just follow along and support you?
I'd say, well, you know, feel free to email in info@747club.org and, you know, we'll communicate that way. But, you know, you mentioned pasta sauce. When you're sitting there saying, I don't know the people or I don't know how to cook in order to host a dinner, here's the two solutions. One, here's social architecture. The rule is the first time someone comes to your dinner, they come alone. Second time they come, they bring a friend. After that, they're eligible to nominate someone. If you make the consistent commitment to hosting a dinner a month in your home for free for your friends, just bring a couple people the first one, have them each bring a friend to the second one, have them nominate someone for the third one, and your community will grow, guaranteed. The second thing is, don't make it fancy.
Yeah.
Biodegradable paper bowls, checkered tablecloths, simple pasta sauce. You could feed 16 people for under $40, guaranteed. We've done it 200 times. So keep it simple. Don't get all fancy. Don't make promises. If you're going to host a dinner, if you're going to try to build community, build it based on like-hearted individuals, not based on, hey, come to my dinner because you can meet such and such. Just do it based on energy. Energy is the glue that will surpass content and influencers and all that shit.
Boom.
Boom.
With that, thanks so much, Chris. Appreciate your time here and our friendship.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me. I love what you're doing here. Dara and Dory have done it quite well, but to take it to the level that you're doing to serve the people with this is unbelievable. Thank you.
Too kind. Thanks so much again, Chris.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks again for tuning in to another Portfolio Career podcast episode. Your interest and support means so much to me. If you want to learn more and subscribe to my monthly personalized newsletter, please head over to PortfolioCareerPodcast.com. There, you can also email me at davidnabinsky@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.